It's go time. You know it's not gonna start without no uprise, though. So it better be that uprise playing right now. Yes, it is. All right, everybody, here we are, the J Bell and OC podcast. We can't be together like we usually are in this close room, very close, talking crazy. OC's looking at me like I'm nuts right now because he didn't know where I was going with that.
Why is your voice getting so low?
So now we have to be social distancing digital, so it sounds different. So that's where we are, but we still coming at you live, ready to go, ready to rock. My brother from another, OC. Just OC. What's up, my man?
Man, I'm here. You know what's so funny? Now that you say that, I think I'm going to change my name, man.
Give it to me now. I need it.
My name from here on out is just going to be OC.
I like that.
No, just OC from here on out.
But that's kind of already what it is.
Yeah. I know, but I think I need to make it official that my name is just OC from here on out.
Real
simple,
it.
Just rolls off the tongue. It's, whenever I'm being introduced anywhere, all I want is just OC. You know how the Brazilians they have that, like, just one name on the back of their jersey? That's me. It's just OC from here on out, man. That's how I'm rolling from here on out.
So we need to make all the jerseys out here in the UK with that 7 deuce on it. Just OC.
Just OC, that's it.
I like that.
Because that's just me, just OC.
You know what we got to do, and we gotta make this official then. The podcast the name started, we just threw it together, right? So it needs to be J Bell and OC, no longer Jason. It needs to
just
be
J Bell.
My moniker, yeah.
I like that. Because right now, with your glasses, the way these glasses are, you look like your name should be J Bell, because I'm not not exactly sure what you got going on. It looks cool though, Jason.
You like them?
I do like them. You look good. You do.
You know, we only give shout outs to people that hold us down.
Okay.
Right? Mm-hmm. So this is Kirk and Kirk.
Kirk and Kirk.
Kirk and Kirk. These are dope, man. They hooked me up. These are fresh glasses.
Oh, they hooked you up.
They hooked me up. And but you next.
No. We're talking about it on our podcast.
But you can see. You want your eyes like mine?
No. You see, this is the problem, man. This is what happens when people start getting too big. All of a sudden, they start showing up with their own stuff, and now it's, hey, look what they gave me, but we're going to give them a plug. No, they didn't give me nothing. They didn't give me nothing.
I got you.
No, they said
whatever you need, bro.
We can't give them a plug until I have my very own.
Okay.
That's the way it works.
Okay. All right.
Soon Coca-Cola is going to give me some money. I'm going to be like, hey, Coca-Cola sponsoring the J&O podcast. And you're going to be like, what?
I didn't say sponsoring. I said they gave
me a dime. So why are you talking about Coca-Cola sponsoring the J&O podcast and Coca-Cola hasn't given J Bell a quarter?
I just said we were going to give him a shout out. Oh, man. But you know what? I got you.
Yes. Thank you. Thank you.
I got you.
Thank you.
You did have some dope. Remember them glasses you had on that had the speaker?
Yeah. Guess what? I'm not going to say what glasses those are.
You wore them on the podcast.
I did not wear them on the podcast. I did not.
I saw.
We're taking pictures. Remember, you guys.
I didn't wear them on the podcast. I stand corrected.
Never mention their name until they start to pay. Never. What's up, bro? How are you, man? You good?
Everything's good, man. Hey, what? I got a question, man. I call you all the time and get all the answers I need. But, you know, sometimes you don't pick up. So when I got you, I got to ask questions.
Okay.
We were talking the other day. You were talking me off a cliff of something that I won't put out there, but you know, your usual days on the phones with me. And I just was thinking, man, I'm like, you know, everybody's talking about things they've learned about themselves with this time to themselves. And you mentioned something to me. You were coming up with some real creative stuff and you were just saying, you know, your mind was in a good place
where you
could be creative. And I wanted to ask, like, what have you kind of learned about yourself in this time to yourself?
Yeah, it's interesting you'd ask me that, Jason, because I'll tell you the thing that I've really, really learned about myself, right? Is that if somebody was to ask me right now, right? And I want to ask you this question too. If somebody is to ask me, OC, what do you love most about yourself? Like, what is the one thing about yourself? Not anybody else. What is the one thing about yourself that you absolutely love? And I think my answer to that question would be, like, the way I think, the way I process information, the way I just the way I think about the world, the way I people around me, the way I am in general. Like, I truly, truly love that about myself. And so over this period of time, you get a lot of time to be by yourself. You understand what I mean? Yeah, like, you're locked down, you're in the house, and a lot of people are going crazy. But the funny thing is, like, to me, I'm fine, because inside myself, like, inside my head, like, I'm okay there. You understand what I mean? Yeah, like, yeah. I love the way I think. I love the way I process information. And so what I've really learned about myself is the most important thing to me is not only my family, but just the way I think and the way I am mentally. And I think that's what I really learned the most over this whole time. What about you?
I'll answer that first before I even comment on what you were saying, because that was intriguing. I'm lucky because I can go second, and I kind of was thinking while you were talking. Mm-hmm. And it would be that I really enjoy learning. Mm. I mean, learning.
Is that what you love most about yourself? You love to learn?
What I mean,
love most about yourself?
That I enjoy processing information. So learning, like, the people have opinions. People want to be good at things. All that is, I think that's human nature. A lot of people want to do things, achieve things. Everybody has this greatness inside of themselves. Mm. But then the work comes. Mm. And the work is a grind. Sometimes it's debilitating, frustrating, whatever you want to call it. And I go through those same emotions also, but I truly enjoy the process. Like, I like that about myself. Like, when I think back about my football career, you know, the things I think about is being, even from high school to college to the pros, I trained back in Long Beach because we had a bunch of dudes that we all trained together. And I think about those days. I think about training, being on high school grass that was basically dirt, no grass. I mean, it was terrible. And I think about the feelings and emotions I had, and it truly was my high. And that's the grind. That's the process. So, like, now we talk all the time, and we're planning our future like everybody else is with this time. Mm-hmm. What do we always talk about? Okay, we need to get better at this. Like, that's what we talk about. Mm-hmm. And then I take that and I'm like, all right, now I got to go work and I got to grind. Mm-hmm. And I like that. So I think that's probably, I mean, it's a gift, right? I didn't, God given, if you call it, but it's the thing that I think helps me. That's the only way I made it in the NFL. I mean, yeah, I had a little talent, but talent gets you there, but it doesn't keep you there. So it's the grind, man. It's enjoy learning stuff.
I gotta say something, J-Bro. And like, I think, like, I'm sitting over here right now and I'm looking at you, and I have to say something, man. I feel like over these past 2 or 3 months, for some odd reason, you're getting more and more handsome. And I can't stand it. I can't. I'm getting very, like, what is going on? Like, okay, I've always known you are a handsome guy, but now you're looking like devastatingly good looking. And I cannot take it, man. What is going on? Explain to me what is going on during this quarantine that you're getting more handsome.
First of all,
I can't understand it. I can't understand.
I'm gonna say something that's gonna make you crack up.
What's going on right now.
Well, you know, I got these glasses on.
I don't care nothing about those glasses, man. I don't care about those glasses.
No.
Explain what's going on here, man.
Okay. There's nothing going on. But years ago,
yes,
you said, J Bell. You looked at me, and you know when you look at me, you got something serious to say. Mm-hmm. We got to stay in shape, J-Bell. We had just come off set, and it was like you were about to tell me something devastating, like, what happened, man? Did I mess up on the show? You like, I realized something. We got to stay in shape, man. And I was like, yeah. And every time you remind me that, I'm like, man, I got to stay in shape. So, you know, I'm just looking at an exercise bike all day. You know, yeah. you just hop on it and grind out.
I like it. I like it.
You know, but I got that inner OC in my ear saying,
always in your ear.
Hey, we got to stay in shape. Only we can mess this up. You better stay. You better stay in shape.
And you know what happened, Jason? It's like it was because I've always been about, you know, us entertaining people and, you know, having fun with the fellas and all that kind of stuff. And then one day I came to the realization that a lot of women watch our show.
That's it.
And because I'd never really thought about that before. I was like, oh, we're just chilling with the guys. We're having a good time with them. We're having a good time with the guys, you know? But then I was told a lot of women watch it. I was like, that's the case, then. You got to look a certain way. I mean, I'm sorry. It is what it is. Listen, what you want me to do?
Hey, you're right. I mean, shout out to a couple of our producers who had mentioned that to us and was like, you know what? Our wives watch the show and, you know, we starting to really question why they're watching the show.
They don't know nothing about football. Not one thing. They sure love that J-Bell.
Osi, you see him on the touchscreen? He sure is knowledgeable. How tall is he? Oh, God. Where's he get his suits from?
Incredible. This is crazy.
Oh, man. So
what's going on in the NFL world? Oh,
tell me.
So, there's been a lot of talk about them playing games in empty stadiums.
Right?
Mm-hmm. Whether that's the NBA, football, and, you know, you hear people coming out saying, oh, some players have came out and said they wouldn't want to play without fans. And, you know, I heard LeBron say that. He might have backtracked on that recently.
Yeah, he said that early on, right?
Yeah. So, the only thing I'll say about that is this, man. You know, once you become a professional, you've put yourself in a position where you are an entertainer, like, period. You could think you're playing sports, you could think whatever you want to, but the fact of the matter is, at this particular point, you are in the entertainment business. You're an entertainer. You have to give the people something to watch.
No doubt.
So whether or not there's people in the stadiums and whether there's people anywhere, of course you want fans to be in the stadiums, but once you become an entertainer, you must understand that whatever you have to do to keep the people entertained, you must do just that. So if there's nobody in the stands, you go out there and play. They're talking about like putting like, you know, crowd noise for the TV and all that type of stuff. I'm okay with that, Jason. I'm okay.
You made
with
a
it.
Comment on that I like on Twitter about FIFA and
when
doing
I'm
that.
The game has become so realistic now, right? That you got your headphones on and you're playing FIFA. It's like you're at an actual game. The noise is like it is ridiculous, man. And when you score, the fans get up, you run to the fans, they get up, they're cheering. You know what I mean? It's like you're in an actual game. And so because of the fact that I play FIFA and I know what that experience is like, I feel like they can do that and get away with it. Mm. You know, the people will just have to get over the fact that maybe those aren't real fans in the stadium. But as players, you have to be able to entertain the people. You got to give them entertainment, man, period.
Yeah, I agree with that. And you know how people always ask you, oh, see, what is it like with the fans in there? Does it make you nervous or this or that? I always used to answer that in reality, when the game's going on, I'm paying attention to my sideline.
You don't hear nothing. Yeah.
Yeah, like I hear what's happening on the field and then all my brothers on the sideline. Like now I'm looking if something happens and I make a play, like it's like my boys, right? We're in it together. So I almost think we're going to see something interesting. Because even in practice, if you make a play, you get hyped.
Get hyped.
You know, you look, you out there competing. Yeah. I think teams, and you're going to see some of the coolest stuff because the way guys just celebrate together. That's what it's all about.
Yeah.
You know, I mean, you really out there bleeding with your brothers and your sisters, however the team is made up. So it's all about, you're going to see that. You're going to see teams just get together after a big play is made where receiver will score and he just runs to, you know, all his offense. And then maybe guys on the sideline come up to him more. Maybe they loosen that restriction up. Yeah, where now defensive guys can run on for a second or whatever. I'm not saying to change the rule book, but I'm saying maybe change the rule book. Because guys get hype, man. You know, they play for each other. So I think, listen, we all love the fans. We all love game day because of that. But listen, everybody in the world is watching. So they're going to go out there and do their thing.
Yeah. I've never – I can't specifically remember a time when I was on the field, right? Mm-hmm. When I was on the field playing and I heard, like, the fans.
Right. Like I'm with you on that.
Yeah, I can't remember a time where I actually heard the fans while I was playing. Yeah. During timeouts, you know, you hear them, you know – but like as the game is going on, man, you are so focused in on
what you're
doing. Yeah, you don't hear nothing that anybody said. Like AP Antonio Pierce.
Yeah,
I would be so focused in on like how I'm going to get off the ball.
Yeah,
how I'm going to get off the ball that AP would be like, "Oh, see, rush, rush, rush," and then he could tell I didn't hear, so he'd come down and he'd smack me. Pow! He's like, "Rush,
go!"
And so I would do that.
How crazy is it on the field that you literally
– Hold on one second. Say what's up. Say what's going on.
Hey! The queen!
Hi, Simon.
You said, hi, Simon.
Yes!
Okay.
That is the boss right there.
Yeah, man.
For everybody who didn't
Simon, know. Stop smiling so hard, man. Stop smiling so hard, man. She actually gave Simon a shout-out. She was like, hey, Simon. She did. Yeah. Incredible.
Miss Osi came on, Layla, my friend. She invites me to dinner, by the way, to all our listeners. And she came on. She's the boss. She is amazing. You guys have a wonderful family.
Yeah.
I miss our dinners.
Yeah, I know.
A lot.
I know. That's something I
truly miss our interactions. And, you know, the world's going through that. And it's okay, right?
Sorry. We're going to get to it. We'll get to it.
And it is hard. That being said, you know about the games. No games in London, bro.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Very, very, very upset.
Mm-hmm.
But I understand why.
Mm-hmm.
You know, I understand. Gives the league flexibility.
Mm-hmm.
Right? Because when you have all the games in America, however you have to adjust the schedule, it allows you to do that. You know, and also, it doesn't take resources away from the UK.
Yeah.
You know, all those games take so much resources. And, you know, at this point in time, resources should be deployed otherwise for people that need them in the country.
Yeah. Yeah.
You know, so those three things are the reason. But I'm very upset. I'm sad. I'm going to miss it.
Yeah. I'm very sad for the fans, the UK fans, the ones who are like diehard, who go to every game, the ones who, you know, in line trying to get tickets and all that stuff. Man, I understand exactly what it means to them. From our perspective, from the NFL UK's perspective, all this means is it just gives us an opportunity to reevaluate what we're doing wrong, how we can get better, how we can better serve the fans, how we can make things better for them for when the NFL does come back next year, which we're pretty sure that it will. For me and you, Jason, all that means is, man, we got to go extra hard on the media side. We gotta
got to
do whatever we can to continue to make sure the NFL UK fans are satisfied, because I mean they deserve it.
Yeah, we gotta give them everything they want, man. One thing I want to talk about before another thing I want to talk about is out here in this country, we know there's a couple of teams that they truly love.
Yeah.
One of them being the Miami Dolphins.
Yeah.
Legendary coach Don Shula passing away.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, if you've ever been to Miami, it feels like the man owned everything, right?
Yeah.
I mean, and the only undefeated team.
Yep.
Right?
Yeah.
And wasn't he, and maybe Simon can help us, I don't know. Super Bowls he won with different quarterbacks, correct?
I think he won with Greasy, right? I know he won with Greasy. Greasy. He's an outstanding coach, man.
You know. And guess who got the number one jersey sales in the UK right now?
Yeah, I heard about that, man.
Tua. They represent out here.
Hard, man. Miami Dolphins are serious out here. Shout out to Miami Dolphins.
Yeah, shout out. We'll dig into the draft. Me and OC always look at the draft and we're like, now let's go prove it, guys.
I don't pay not one bit of attention to that, man. I've seen too many busts.
Yeah,
I've seen too many busts, man.
I'm with you on that. Like, I understand in the media the draft grades. I get that. But how do you grade a draft?
Ridiculous.
These guys haven't even been on the field yet. I mean, we can look at the top guys and evaluate those, and I love looking at the quarterbacks and, you know, the first rounders, early second rounders. But after that, man, it is a free-for-all who goes out and gets it and makes it happen.
Man, J-Bell, Mel Kiper had me ranked as the 42nd best defensive end in my class.
There you go.
42.
And he's the expert.
42, J-Bell.
He's the expert.
Second best defensive end in my class.
He's
out of all of them, only one of them had a better career than I did.
There you go.
That's why.
That your year, who came out with you? DeMarcus was the year after.
DeMarcus was 2 years after me.
2 years after. Not Julius.
No, Julius was before me.
Who?
Terrell Suggs.
Oh, man, I forgot T. Suggs is that old.
You know what's so funny? The year we came out, he was number one in sacks. I was number two.
Out of Arizona State.
Arizona State. He had number one in the nation. I was number two in the nation. And
you guys panned out.
The 42nd.
This is why we don't jump into draft grades. Yeah. I got something that's been on my mind.
Okay.
Something interesting. It actually affects three of us on here, including Simon. Mm-hmm. We are not the only black people Simon knows, by the way. We're going to.
That is a shock. That is a shock.
Simon's like, oh man, what are y'all doing? Did you hear about the story with Ian Wright?
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Did you read the comments that this kid, I'm not sure how old he was, so I'm calling him a kid. I'm not quite sure his age. But that he said, I think it was a direct message to Ian Wright, who supposedly gets a lot of these things all the time.
Yeah.
Before I even think about what I think, I want to know how you feel about that. Like, what's NROC say?
NROC says that this guy who sent this to Ian Wright did a very, very stupid thing. He did. What he did was stupid. It was childish. It was irresponsible. It was with no thought about what this is going to do to him or anything. It was very, very childish and stupid. Is it racism? To me, no, it wasn't. And that is because of the way I have chosen to think about racism. That is because of the way I choose to define what racism actually is, you know? And so because of that, I refuse to say that is racism. I was talking to one of my friends the other day, and he said something that it made me laugh. Like, I laughed so hard, bro. He was like, it's not what somebody calls you, it's what you answer to. Now, I want you to really, really think about that. It's not what somebody calls you, it's what you answer to. So if somebody's calling you monkey and all kinds of stuff, you're not a monkey. So why does that bother us so much? You could say, yes, it's because of the past historical stuff, the historical. You could say all that, but to me, somebody calling me a monkey and somebody calling me an idiot and somebody calling me a terrible defensive end, all those three, those are the same thing to me. To me, the way I choose to process it, those are the same thing to me, because I know all of those are lies. I know none of those really apply to me. So when I see people, getting upset and getting angry and ranting and raving about things like this, to me, I just don't think that we can get far like that. When I say we, I'm talking about black people. I don't think we can progress if we continue to label stuff like that as racism, and we continue to ignore the real things that are going on, the real people in higher up places, the real people in control of resources, the real people in control of things that actually make a difference, we continue to ignore them, and we continue to fight and squabble and raise hell over things that, quite frankly, are meaningless. A little boy called you a monkey. You're Ian Wright. You're one of the, actually, I think like someone was saying, the most famous, you know, black person.
One of them
in the UK. One of them in the UK. So we can get angry. We can continue to label that as racism. But I'm more concerned about what I consider the real people in power, the people who actually have who are actually holding black people down. You understand? Mm-hmm. I'm more concerned about those people. Those are the ones that I want us to stop pointing the finger at and saying, this is racism. This is what this person is doing. These people aren't giving us opportunities. These people aren't representing us right. These people aren't doing the correct things for people of color. That's who I want us to start labeling as racist, instead of little 12-year-olds or 13-year-olds or the inconsequential person in the stands who's saying, oh, I'm not a monkey. I don't care. You can't do anything to me. You can't hold me down. As a matter of fact, you're responsible for my kid being in the best private school in the world. You're responsible for, you know, helping me have these nice houses and the way we live. You're partly responsible for that. So you can call me anything you want to. I don't care about that. I'm concerned about the person who's not going to allow me to progress or to progress. That's why I want us to start labeling and to start raising hell up, to start, you know, directing all our hoopla towards is those kind of people. But that's just me.
No, it's a valid argument. I know how you think, because we've discussed these things before on a very macro level, right?
Yeah.
This is a micro individual incident. But the one thing you said, and I do agree what you're saying, but if you think about those that get into power, right? Mm-hmm. They're all individuals.
Mm-hmm.
Who know, you know, and they all grow up and they all see the world however they see it.
Mm-hmm.
And that frames their mindset whenever they do get power.
Mm-hmm.
Now, why I like what he did is because I think you have to remind people mm-hmm. who don't see the world like that, who are good people that think, man, people don't think like that. People don't talk like that. These, you know, the world's changed, right? Especially with kids. We always try to blame that behavior on older generations. Mm-hmm. Things have changed now. You know, kids don't see it like that. This is a reminder that mm-hmm. some do, and that these kids can grow up and be in those powerful situations, in those positions of power that you talked about.
Mm.
And so if that happens, then they will continue to be the oppressor in a way and think of black people in that discriminatory fashion. I'm with you, but
let me ask you this though. You think somebody who thinks like this, right? Or somebody mm-hmm. who actually thinks like that, you think this is going to teach him the error of his ways? I mean, is this going to teach him, I'm talking about like actual feelings, not, mm-hmm. oh, I'm sorry, I got caught. Mm-hmm. I'm talking about, I don't need to be thinking about black people as monkeys. I don't think that'll change. Right. So
right. But what I do think
we need to start addressing
right
the real issues, not just the surface stuff.
Yeah.
We need to address the real problem here.
Yeah. You're right about that. And what I'm saying is I agree. Do I think that's gonna change him? No. But we have laws in place to keep people in check, right? You can be a really bad person. Luckily, we don't know or deal with anybody like that, that thinks and wants to do bad things. But the fact that they might go to jail or this negative thing might happen to them keeps them in check. Not all people, mm-hmm. most people, the rule of law. So when mm-hmm. you call somebody out like that, or they think that that can happen to them, mm-hmm. or has it changed their mind? Oh, see, I agree with you. No. Mm-hmm. It just keeps it inside. It keeps it tucked away.
But what does that do?
It doesn't do anything as far as changing the outcome of society, but it lets them people know they have to conform and they can't free will, free deal, and say whatever they want without repercussions.
Completely. You're 100%
so,
right.
You know, but it doesn't solve everything, but
my point is this. My point is this, right? We can continue to do that, mm-hmm. right? We can continue to do that. And okay, now this guy's going to be like, oh, you know what? Or maybe 1,000 people, 100,000 people are going to be like, you know what? maybe I'm not going to call Jason a monkey. I'm not going to call OC a monkey, right? I'm not going to say that online. I'm not going to do any of that, right? But the people who are actually racist, who control governments, who control media, who control everything in this world, they're going to continue to be racist. And they're going to continue to hold people of color down. That's what I'm trying to say. I'm not saying that this is right. All I'm saying is we need to, instead of focusing on little stuff like this, in my opinion, we need to focus on the big stuff, man. The people up top, man. The people who are in power. We need to start speaking truth to them. We need to start calling out real systematic or systemic racism. Because all I see is, oh, this person called me a monkey. This person called me the N-word. This person did that. And it's clogging up. It's confusing people. And it's taking away from the actual racists, like the real ones who are in control, who have real power. That's what we need to address, man. And that's...
Do you think it's hard to see that? Do you think it's hard to see that because we are... It's constrained us and constricted us for so long, and it's around us that we kind of don't even see it? I mean, it's pushing us down, but so it's easy to focus on this thing in front of us, right?
Exactly.
Because it's there. You just got punched in the mouth, and we know what that feels like. But, you know, when you've been caged in for so long, you just kind of get used to it. And I think we have to be aware of that and keep pushing that narrative because, yeah, I mean, it's tough.
100%, man. 100, Jason. I understand why it's like that. I get it. It's almost because you can't really see it. The one that you do see, we all want to jump on that, man. But man, I just feel like we have to start thinking about things in a completely different way. For instance, people like they get upset at me, or you know, they start to think I'm going crazy when I say I don't hold white people responsible for slavery. Like when I say that out loud, people are like, especially black people, they're like, what do you mean? Blah, 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 blah. I get that. I understand it. I understand why you would think like that. But here's why I think the way I think, right? Mm-hmm. Okay. Number one, I'm from Nigeria. Like I'm from Africa, right? And I know African people, right? The thought to me, just knowing where I come from, that a bunch of white people sailed across the ocean, went into our villages, kidnapped our people, and took them across seas. Me knowing Africans and me knowing the way, that is an impossibility. You understand what I'm trying to say? Mm-hmm. That could have never happened. Now, what I do know, and from doing research and from studying it, is we would fight amongst ourselves, right? We would capture tribal wars. We would capture people and we would sell them to the white people, and they would now take them across. So white people are 100%, well, they're responsible. They have a part to play in slavery, but you know who else has a part to play in slavery? We do. And to me,
Africans. Yes.
Africans, 100%. We 100%, we caused that. So to me, you know what that is? That is a liberating thought. It's a liberating thought to me.
Yes. You understand what I mean? You're nobody's victim.
No, it's a liberating thought to me. Okay, if we did this to ourselves, that means the white man isn't God. You understand? Because if they're actually able to capture you, enslave you, and bring you to their world, now you're almost, you know, you have a complex.
The superiority complex is real.
Exactly. So to me, I'm like, no, we did this to ourselves. So guess what? Now you're not superior. Now we're on the same playing field because I can fix that. You know, I can go to, I'm be like, listen, we're not going to do this. You can't do that. You shouldn't have done that. And as a matter of fact, I think African leaders should apologize for that nonsense that happened back then. And so my thought process is completely different, man. I'm all about taking responsibility, you know, accepting my responsibility and seeing how we can fix that. And if everybody starts to think, I mean, think about all the black people thinking, okay, we weren't enslaved, our people sold us. Now you might have some problems, Africans, but you're no longer going to be in America or the UK. You're no longer going to be in any of these places feeling inferior. You understand? You're not going to feel that way because, hell, we did this to ourselves and we can fix that. That's just the way I think about things, man. Maybe I'm crazy.
No, I mean, listen, we're having a conversation and that's what we should mm-hmm. be doing. And we're having it with our people. It's thought provoking. Mm-hmm. We've had this before. So I know where you come from. And I like the fact that being from Africa and being African, you can say things and you understand.
Yeah.
So when you say certain things and it's plenty of times where I've witnessed the way you think about things. And I'm like, wow, I see the liberation in his thoughts that I don't have being a Black American and not being aware of some things and the way I think about some things. And I needed to free myself from that. Mm-hmm. And those of you've heard me talk to you about those kind of things.
Yeah.
So it's all about learning and gathering perspective from others. And I mean, if we don't do that with our friends, I mean, we're just handicapped, man. We just don't want to learn. There's a quote I wanted to say in all this that I truly believe. And it's, we will long forgive the violence of our enemies, but never forget the silence of our friends. Mm. So when something like this happens, you want to have this conversation with your friends and you want to feel free that you can. Different perspectives, how you felt, whatever, and being able to verbalize those things within your group of people you consider friends. That's what matters.
Can I tell you something, Jason? And I got to be honest. And when I think about this, it makes me emotional in a way, right? But man, I am so proud of Black Americans, man. I'm so proud of y'all.
Hey, man, we all grinding together.
Bro, listen to me. I am so proud of y'all, bro. Like, I really am. What the Black American and, you know, has done, specifically the Black American to me, is nothing short of, it's mind-blowing. It is. Do you realize that as bad as things are in America for Black people, the Black American is the most successful Black person in the world?
Wow.
Hands down.
Wow.
There's no other place in the world that you will find people as successful as the Black American. It just doesn't exist. There's no, as bad as things are, I mean, think about that. As bad as things are in America for Black people, it is still the best place in the world for Black people to succeed and to achieve things. There's no other place like that. And to think about what you've had to endure and to be where you had a Black president? Like what? Think about that.
No.
Think about where you came from. Think about where you've come from. And what you're doing right now. And so, man, for all the nonsense, for all the, oh, they're shooting Black people in the streets and all this stuff that's going on in America, to understand, because I've lived in so many places, to understand that that is still the best place in the world to be Black. It's crazy, man. It's crazy.
It's these kind of conversations need to be had. That's all I mean. They need to be had. And I guess when you got a lot of time to think in quarantine, you can dig deep into these kind of conversations. Because I've heard you say a lot of things in the end. I never hear you say that before. So something to think about, my brother. Something to think about. OC got nothing for me. All right. All right, OC, we got a question from Hayden. Sounds like a G name, you know, gangster. You know what I mean?
I know Hayden. I played football with Hayden.
Nice. Was he good?
He's a pretty good player. Good. I play with him every Wednesday and Sunday. Shout out to Hayden. Yeah.
Hayden. Shout out to Hayden.
Brixton. Mm-hmm.
Brixton. All right. This is the question. Is that your hood, Brixton? Or are you like you?
Yes, that's my football hood, Brixton.
That's your football hood?
Okay. Yeah, I play football up there twice a week. Okay. I'm in Brixton.
Is that where I've gone?
Yeah, that's where you came.
Yeah. I like being out there. I'm a fan out there. I stand on the side and everything. Yeah. It's cool. All right, good. Cool. Nice. I know what's up. With Tua drafted by the Dolphins, what is it like to play with or against a left-handed quarterback? Love the podcast. This is an interesting question because it affects both of us, actually.
Yeah.
So from the defensive end standpoint, you're used to either being the front side of the quarterback, right? If he's, mm-hmm. or you're coming from the backside where he doesn't see you. And you were coming from the blind side.
Blind side, yeah.
Yeah, so the quarterback could never see you. So you would probably have to adjust your game a little bit because he would be able to see how you were rushing him, correct?
Yeah, I really did not like playing against the left-handed quarterback simply because I had to be a lot more disciplined in the way I would rush because I know he could see me. Now, I think maybe – I think I had like 35, 36 forced fumbles. Like, it just a ridiculous
amount. That was your thing.
Yeah. But that was because I was able to come from the blind side, and the quarterback couldn't see me. So rather than going for the hit, I was going to knock out the quarterback's hand, if knock the ball out of his hand if he's a right-handed quarterback. But if he's a left-handed quarterback, I had to change the way I rush. I had to be more conscious of making inside moves because he could always bounce outside. He was looking directly at me. So I didn't really enjoy playing against the lefties.
Yeah, and you didn't – there wasn't – a lot of them out there, so you didn't have time to really prepare and get your skill set for that. That's very true. And as a defensive back, it changes everything because we have certain route combinations, right? Mm-hmm. And for the most part, if you're going against a right-handed quarterback, you're playing the left side, and you get the route tree, all the different route combinations that a right-handed quarterback could throw because it's harder to throw against your body. So if I'm on the opposite side, a right corner, then I know most of the routes I have to cover against a right-handed quarterback are in-breaking because those are easier routes for him. It's hard for him to throw an out, you know, back across his body and things like that. Mm-hmm. So you just get used to that kind of route tree and seeing those same routes. But then all of a sudden you get a left-handed quarterback and it switches. You're getting attacked like you are a quarter corner on the other side. So it's something you just have to be aware of. And no matter how many times you do one-on-ones, a cover, I mean, you get used to what you've been seeing throughout the season. So you throw a left-handed guy in there, and it does throw you off a little bit. You have to be aware of that. But this is the advantage left-hand quarterbacks have. All right, OC, we're gonna end with that conversation. But I've been thrown under the bus on Twitter by a Ross Faux Dice, not four. Faux Dice.
Oh, okay. All right. I'm with it. What happened? What happened?
We're gonna peep it right now.
Hey, JBL. I just wanted to follow up on my message that I sent last week. I sent you direct on Instagram. I wanted you in the period of lockdown to get in touch with my wife and to wish her a happy birthday. She's turning 28 in quarantine, in lockdown. And you're basically her favorite television personality. And you've not got back to me. Long-term listeners of the podcast, and if anything, I think OC would have got back to us by now. So do the right thing. Respond. Get in touch. Thank you.
I responded, though. I responded.
After I responded.
After OC, tell him exactly what you said, because what you said was funny.
I mean, listen, you got to choose your favorites wisely. Choose your favorites wisely. Because I would have responded, you know. But Jason is the man of the people. But I would have been the one to respond. I mean, you know, it is what it is.
Oh, when I saw that, OC, it was late. I saw that. I hit that man so quick on Twitter. OC said, you chose. There you go. Kenzie. I did it before. I'm doing it again. Happy birthday. Legendary call out. I don't want, just call me out, man. It doesn't matter, you know. And OC is very considerate. He would have responded first. But you know what? You got to me. It's game over, man. I need some uprise to get us out of here, though. Simon. All right, man. We are out, OC. Probably call you in 10 minutes to bother you some more. Uprise all day, every day. You know what's up.
I'm gonna go eat. Hold up. Love y'all. I'll see y'all next time. Your buddy, I'm gonna make a baby lightning thunder. Why you looking like it's August? It ain't even summer. What's you know your bumper? Tell me what's your name and number. I get numbers when I'm on the street, but I do not talk too much. Don't do it.
jam pack gang on the street from the whip, but I do not talk too much. When the sun's out, she looks swaggy, and I'm blacked out with no belly. Tell a girl, come chill, we make money. Damn, my lip tastes just like honey. I grab the number, then I'm in. She got a sis, that's a twin.